So, peeps, our next speakers, Fernando Spina and Lisandro Loria, over here, are to, you know, to show us something about Godot 4, right? Godot 4 got a lot of love. Godot 4.1 got a lot of love again. And Godot 4.2, even more so. And it's a lot that it can do. Now, Lisandro and Fernando are going to show us just how good it can look, because they tried for 2 months. All right. So, peeps, welcome them to the stage.
Okay, there's so many people. I wasn't expecting that many people. So I'm extremely nervous right now. Okay, so Fernando, Lisandro, and we have Fer here. We call him Fer GPT because he's in Argentina. Okay, so he's listening via YouTube, and if you have any questions for him, he can respond. So, there we go. We are a very small team in W4. I don't know if you know W4, but it was founded by some of the creators of Godot and some other people that you might know. And we are part of what we call the demo team. We create small demos, prototypes, usually in 2 months, 3 months, not more than that. We have Lisandro here programming, Fernando here doing the art, and me as a game designer and a project manager. So I'm the only one less technical, so my whole thing is asking for them to do things and then telling them there's no more time to do it. move it. Okay, so yeah, what we do is actually we create games and we intend to release those games for free open source so you guys can play it, check them, learn from them. And every game we do is to actually showcase some of the things that we're doing in W4 as private products. So just to give you an idea of what we've been doing lately. This is Planet Crushers, and this is what we have been doing for the last, I don't know, three months? Yeah? Four? Yeah. so we had two months to do this, and this is where we come from. Just to give you an idea of what you're about to see, the 3D demo that you're about to see was made by people who 2 months prior were doing pixel art. I don't know how many of you are programmers. In Godocon, yeah. How many of you are artists or consider yourself artists? Well, yeah, okay. So the idea is that we had a 3D artist who has never, he was really good at Blender, but he had never done Godot or worked with the Godot float. And he was doing pixel art and hyper casual games. And suddenly some of our bosses told us, we need something really great visually. You have 2 months. Go. So we, or he, had to learn a lot really quickly. So that didn't give me, for example, a chance as a game designer to actually ask for many things. We have some ideas of what we want to do with that scene. Because we started doing something completely different, sci-fi and with shooting. And then Juan came and said, use this castle. It's going to be really easy. And it wasn't. So we're working now with a huge scene in Blender, and it was kind of like a headache, but the good thing about the headache is that we learned so much trying to do that, particularly the workflow from working with something that exists in Blender and then putting them in Godot and working. So Planet Crushers is, today we are releasing it, so if you want to download it, yeah! It's there. Nobody knows about this, so you got the premiere of our little, very little game. No? Okay. Oh, of course it's going to happen. Okay. of course it was going to happen. Okay. So you can download it after the call. I'll give you the proper link. Okay. Okay, so what did we do with our current project? It's called Legend of the Nuku Warriors because we wanted a Japanese name. It looked like that, and we did it in 2 months. We didn't have much idea of what gameplay it was going to have at first. But as we ran out of time, we didn't run out of options. So we are going to be doing with this scene and these characters something of a JRPG, very simple, because we have 2 more months to complete it. So that's the main idea of what we intend to do. Lisandro here is going to show you actually how we move the scene from Blender to Godot and all the problems that we had. That's pretty much the idea and the context of what you're going to see. So if you've never worked in 3D and you want to give it a try, in 2 months you can be doing this, provided you have the proper help. We also intend to release more documentation about everything we have learned here in the next month. Yeah, so.
Okay, so basically, this is basically the demo so far. It's mostly you have an FPS controller. We got that from the asset store.
Okay.
Okay. It's fine.
It's fine.
All right.
Awesome. Okay, so basically you have an FPS character controller. We got that from the SS store. You have also a free floating camera to look around and see behind the scenes everything that's not finished yet. It has a couple of features that we wanted to try. For example, it's using Dario Samo implemented for 4.2 AMD FSR 2.2 upscaling, and that is one of the options. When you have access to the emulator, you will be able to just like toggle it and see how good it looks. Like you can run the game at a quarter of the resolution, and it still looks really really cool. We also added like a day-night transition. We are using Clayjon's volumetric clouds. Basically, yeah, you have a slider where you can control like the time of the day, and it will affect things like the water will rise, like the tides. You also have a fog that appears at night that disappears during the day. I'm not gonna go much longer into this because we're gonna talk about the technical details just a bit, but yeah, this demo will be available for you. It's gonna be mid license, everything except some professional assets that we got. I'm gonna talk a bit later about it. So those are gonna be like Creative Commons, non-commercial, and if you want, you can get a license. But everything else, what we did at W4, that's gonna be mid license. So you will be able to get this and do whatever you want. Okay, so thank you.
It's not over.
What else are you gonna show? Oh, okay. So let's go a bit more into some technical details. I have to use the editor sometimes. Oh. It's okay. One of the problems that we had this from a previous most of the environment from a previous abandoned project, so that's also saved us a lot of time to do it in 2 months. It also helps to have two very senior members of the Godot rendering team also working at W4, so that's just a bit of help, right? One of the problems that we had is duplicated meshes. So we had this big scene that we are exporting as a single GLTF file. And what happens is, if you see, for example, those columns are all exactly the same, but they have modifiers. So they are link duplicates. Blender knows they are the same thing with the same modifiers, with the same parameters. But currently, the GLTF exporter is not being able to be aware of that and say, oh, OK, when I apply the modifiers, I'm going to get exactly the same mesh every time. So it doesn't really make sense to export like 1,000 columns with 1,000 duplicated meshes. Just reuse that one. So that doesn't happen. We get tons of meshes, and that results in more memory when we run the game, and also a lot more draw calls, because that cannot be patched, because the engine thinks they are different things. So it's usually, the way it's usually solved is you export, you have the 3D artist export everything as tiny chunks, and then you kind of rebuild everything inside the engine. And I noticed this workflow works if you're at a big company, or if you need a lot, if you have a level designer that has nothing to do with the actual 3D artist. But in our workflow, for two people, wanted to have it be very Blender centric. I wanted Fernando to work on the tool that he likes and that he's comfortable with. And at the same time, I wanted the integration process to be as automatic as possible. I don't want to have to manually check, delete stuff, and then duplicate it in Godot or toggle checkboxes. So we tried to find a way to deduplicate this in the editor. So the first approach, because I thought, OK, if we compare the data, it's going to be really slow. Like, if I have 2,000 meshes and I have to compare all the data against the other 2,000 meshes, that's going to make the import take like an hour, right? So I said, OK, well, I'm gonna make one thing. You just make everything that needs to be duplicated have exactly the same name and add a hyphen ddup. So it's just like Godot has this hyphen call that creates collision. OK, let's add our own, add hyphen ddup. And it should be the same name except the final number suffix. So when I see that, I'm going to assume it has the same mesh, and I'm going to deduplicate it. And that seemed to work, but he has some problems. So it is completely manual. So Fer had to go and rename everything to add that little ddup. Even if you can kind of automate it, he didn't know how, so he had to rename everything. And it's really easy to make a tiny mistake. You can have a typo and things don't get deduplicated, or even worse, which is, for example, here. So here, as you can see, if I see this as the programmer, I see nothing wrong with it. This is a bitraw, and there is some empty space. So I thought that it was meant to look like that. But then I look at the Blender file, and this blue thing here is another mesh. And so that was supposed to exist somewhere. So why is not there in the game? And it's basically because they had the same name with the ddup, so it got deduplicated. It got the first one and say, OK, this one is the second one. Because the script doesn't know about the actual mesh contents. It just checks the naming scheme. So it needed to look actually like the image on the right. So we tried a different approach. So I say, OK, I'm going to have to somehow consider the actual data. But how can we do it in a somewhat performant way? So my first idea was, OK, I can use mesh.getFaces. And that will basically give me a packed vector 3 array of all the vertex content in that mesh. I can hash that. And if the hashes match, it's supposed to be the same mesh. So I make like a dictionary, and I use that hash as a key. And then when I get one mesh that is not there yet, I put it in the dictionary. If I see another one that hashed to the same value, I drop it and reuse the one that I've already seen. And if not, I add it to the dictionary. So it's just one iteration. By the time we are done, we have everything deduplicated. And that, I thought it would be kind of slow, but it took 6 seconds on this laptop to duplicate more than 2,000 meshes. So it's only one thing that happens when you import. So if you drop the GLTF file, it already takes a long time because it has to do a lot more than just running that script. So those 6 seconds don't matter that much. And it got us a 20% reduction in draw calls. So that was really cool, helped with performance, especially because we didn't have time to go and optimize all the geometry and make sure that everything ran well. But then talking to Clayton, he mentioned, like I said, am I sure they are the same mesh because they have the same vertex data? And he said, like, well, it could be the same mesh in terms of vertex data, but maybe the UVs are different, or like that there are more things that can make a mesh different than just the actual vertices. So yesterday, basically, or the day before, I tried to make it even better, and instead of using get faces, I basically get all the arrays from all the surfaces, so get all that together, hash that, and use that, which is much more accurate because it can detect two meshes that only differ in UVs or tangents or vertex colors. So it handles edge cases much better. And it turns out that it's also 20% faster than the other approach. And one nice thing about Godot being open source is that I can go see the source, see how get faces works, and see, oh yeah, of course, this is going to take more time because it has to produce data that we don't have, while this approach uses data that is already generated. So yeah, that helped us a lot to get the project running at 60 FPS, even though we have a lot more to do. So another thing that we didn't get to use it in the demo because we finished it very late in the production, but I think it might be useful for a lot of people, is you know how when you import from Blender into Godot, you have those these import hints like hyphen call that will generate collisions automatically, hyphen convex call, call only if you only wanted to use that mesh as a collider, and yeah, same thing. If you have someone if you have a specific person that's going to take care of integration, maybe they can build that in Godot. But if you can have that as just like a tiny thing that you add to the name and it creates everything for you, for a small team, it's really useful. So what I thought is, okay, but can we do more? Like, what if we want to automate more stuff? Because we cannot add everything to the name. Like, you cannot have a database inside the name of a mesh node in Blender. It doesn't scale well. But Blender has this nice thing called custom properties, which is basically just a key value store. So you can give your property a name and then choose, okay, what's it going to be? So it's going to be a string, integer, so whatever you want. And when you export these to GLTF, the way it's handled is they get converted to a JSON object. So this is part of the GLTF schema. So every time you have custom properties in Blender, you get this in your GLTF JSON file. And the thing is, Godot also has something that's very similar. Godot in the object class, you have setMeta and getMeta. And you can actually, without needing to add a script, without needing to add exported variables, you can add metadata to anything. Like, it could be to a node, it could be to a resource. So it could be to our meshes, to our mesh instances, to our materials, our cameras, or lights. So if we need that, we can do it. The problem is that as it works right now, the Godot GLTF importer is reading that extras JSON, but not doing much with it. It's only caring about something regarding blend shapes, and it's ignoring the rest. So I tried to find a way to make it work. And the way it works is in two stages. So
The first stage is writing GLDF document extension. So that happens when the file is imported. We have access to everything. We have access to the resulting Godot scene, and we also have access to the JSON data. And at that point, we can like intercept that importing process and say, okay, let's add all those extra properties. Let's convert it into metadata. The only problem we had is that it works almost for everything, but it doesn't work for mesh instances, which were probably the largest use case, because those are created as importer mesh instance first, and then there is like a built-in document extension that will convert it at, and at the point where we have access to this, we don't have access to the final meshes. So what I had to do is basically, okay, I add a sibling node with that metadata. It's just like a placeholder node for that metadata, and then at later stage with a post import script, we basically I say, okay, whatever I find the node, it has the metadata. Okay, the previous one, the previous sibling is the one that I care about. I have to merge that back in, and that's how we get metadata in everything. And what do you do with that? Well, you can do whatever you want. And as I said, if you have, for example, a walking simulator where it's more about the art style, that careful placement of everything in terms of a gameplay. Like, it's not an FPS where you have someone that's really worried about if a column is like 10 millimeters here or there in terms of gameplay. In other games, it's more about, does it look good? So it's really important that the 3D artist has full context of what he can see. So you can do whatever. You can say, okay, this wall should be destroyed in 5 hits. You can add that as a custom property, and then in the post import script, you can make it automatically convert that into your prepared scene with all the logic, and then just add the mesh, and you don't have to have a person doing that manually, right? So. And there are people asking for like creating proposals for what I've just implemented here, like the duplication and the extra properties. Those are actually open proposals, so there are users that want this in Godot. So it is working now, at least in GScript. So if it makes sense to somewhat have it as a feature or an optional feature in Godot, well, we'll see, but at least it can be done. There is a way to do it. How much time do we have left? Okay, so adding water to the mix. So we wanted to have a nice, really nice ocean, but I don't know that much about shader programming. As Fer mentioned, we were doing pixel art games like 2 months before. So in case you don't know, there is this really cool page called godotshaders.com, and it has tons of really cool stuff. So we found one that looked pretty interesting. It's a water shaded by a user called Union Bytes, but it was for Godot 3. And it was kind of in the process of porting it to Godot 4, so I took that. And there were some issues with some buildings. I don't know if I have it. Let's see if I have it here. Yes, there are some issues with, for example, yeah. No, it's okay. It's okay. Like model matrix, model view matrix. So those buildings changed names, and it was mostly fixing that to make it look good. Let me see if I can open the scene that I want. And that mostly fixed some issues when you move the camera, that the water would not look good. It will kind of jitter around. But yeah, the other thing that I wanted to fix is, I'll show it in the demo, it's much easier. So another thing that I wanted to fix is, let's see. So if you, I'm gonna need you to help me just a bit. Yeah, thank you. So as you can see, when the water meets the shore, it has this this nice smooth transition. So in the original shader, this was basically a clear cut between water and the shore, and it looked kind of retro for how otherwise pretty good looking and photorealistic the shader is. That transition didn't look good at all. So to make that and also to make the basically to make the water in the horizon also smoothly disappear instead of being a clear cut where you see, oh, this is a mesh that doesn't go infinitely far. So to fix those two things, I noticed that, okay, well, I don't know that much about shaders to do it myself, but I know that Godot has a standard material. And the standard material already has that functionality. So if you open,
if you create a standard material, you already have the proximity fade that you can just enable, and you have the distance fade again that you can just enable. And this is the same trick that Janusz mentioned in his talk. So basically, you just go here and convert it to a shader material, and you can check the shader, and basically, again, you can steal the hard work of all the contributors and say, oh, okay, where is that? Oh, here, proximity fade, distance fade. Okay, I'll copy this. It will complain that those uniforms are missing. So where are they? Okay, here. And it's basically just, I just move that into the water shader and it worked. So that's for the water. Thank you. The other thing that we wanted to make work, well, again, this is if you were at Jan's talk, this is basically the same approach. Sorry for the overlapping content. So basically, we had a terrain, and we wanted to have smooth transitions between different materials. And Fer had already solved that in Blender. By creating basically a visual shader that did that. It's basically you have a set of like three albedos, three normal maps, or in our case it was an ORM, it was a combined texture. And it's pretty simple. You paint the vertex colors, and the red channel will be one of those texture sets, the green channel will be another, and the blue channel will be another. And you just, depending on the how high those channels are, so how much red, how much green, how much blue you have, that's basically how much you're going to mix them together. It's just like a couple of mix operations. So that was pretty straightforward. So it was mostly... I think I have the code here. So that was pretty simple to recreate as a shader because it didn't import automatically. So Godot doesn't really know how shaders work in Blender. Like they work in a different way. It's not like a one-to-one. Like you make a shader in Blender and automatically you have that as a visual shader in Godot. I wish we had, if someone is smart enough to do that, it would be awesome. So in this case, it was as simpler as, again, creating an ORM material, converting it to shader, and then just adding this function to do the mixing, and that's it. So that's how we got the how we got those smooth terrain transitions, like between rock and grass here, or rock and sand, or different types of rock. And yeah, another thing that we wanted to have is we wanted to, since we had a short amount of time, we wanted to avoid having to create all the content. If we could use professional assets, that would be awesome. I mean, we tried with open source assets, but creating nice looking 3D assets is something really valuable. So if you're really good at creating 3D assets, you're usually doing that as your day job, and you're charging for it. So it's hard to like, there are nice looking open source assets, but usually it's very limited. And we found a lot of like low poly, very stylized stuff that was cool, but we were doing something that was a bit more intermediate, a bit more towards photorealism, not fully photorealistic, but a bit towards that. So what we did is try to negotiate with some of these companies to be able to use some of their assets. And of course, that's also hard because it's really hard to relicense something. I mean, if you have that revenue stream from those nice looking trees or whatever, it's really hard to say, okay, I want to pay FX price for a license, and people are going to be able to, I want that like mid license. So your tree that's getting you a nice amount of money every month, so suddenly everyone can download and use that for free commercially. So it's really hard to like, how much are you going to charge, right? So what we found as a really nice compromise, and this was when the Nature Manufacturer guys approaches us, is, okay, we can do that as Creative Commons, non-commercial. So say if we do that licensing for our assets, we can give you access to much more stuff, and you can show it in demo. It works for us because if the people see it in demo and they like it, they can also get a license, and that's it. So that's what I mentioned earlier. Other than, for example, in this case, we got this done also late in the development process, so we only got to add the trees, but the idea is to add more of their stuff. And again, if you like that, you can contact them. Everything else that you see in the demo will basically be fully open source, mid license for whatever purpose. And also the way those are integrated into the engine is with the amazing Proton Scatter plugin. Who has heard of Proton Scatter here? Okay, so quite a few. So yeah, I have never used it. It was like so easy to basically download it, make it work, easy to learn. So I love Proton Scatter right now, and it's also so performant. So these trees, they're not using multi-meshes because I had some issues with Alpha. They're actually using copies. Even though they're using copies, we get stable frame rates. That's also thanks to a lot of optimizations on the rendering side of things. But it's awesome that it's so simple. Like you create some volumes here, some spheres, and you tell it, okay, just populate this with trees, snap them to the collider, and that's it. So it's a really easy way to have like thousands of objects, create a forest or whatever you want. What worked, what didn't, and what can we improve? So mesh duplication, I think it worked pretty well. It gave us a nice performance boost. In the end, it didn't have errors. So when we had the final version, I think it was a net positive in the project. It saved us a lot of time. As Arishan mentioned, Proton Scatter 2, it was super easy to use, super easy to set up, great performance. So for something that was added like a few days before Godocon, I was super nervous that it would make everything break, and now worked perfectly fine. Again, we were also worried, okay, those assets from Nature Manufacturer, they work with Unreal before. Unreal? Or Unity? Well, they were very focused on like the photorealistic style, and we were worried because ours was kind of stylized. So are they gonna integrate well? But yeah, at least for the ones we tried, they integrated pretty well. So that was also some that were fine. What didn't work as well is, well, I during those 2 months, on top of having a little time and not knowing that much about this level of 3D art, I was also working with dev builds from Godot 4.2. So if you have used Godot 4.2, like Dev 1, Dev 2, it's like you get all the bugs. It also means that we got to fix a couple of really nasty bugs. So at least we got to give back to the community by reporting those bugs, and they're already fixed in I think it's the 4 or 5 by now. So I had to suffer with that so that you didn't have to. And well, something that you may have not noticed it, but it didn't work that well, is the day to night transition. So there is the night is completely fake. It's basically the same cloud shader that's meant for day sky, for daytime, and it's basically we just use a sun that it's kind of blue tinted and very dim. It kind of looks like the moon is going around. But also, when you then wanted to make it rise as a sun, you have to like quickly rotate everything. It doesn't work that well, but it's pretty easy to just add basically the transition with the starry night, and then blend between like the two functions, the one that will create the nice daytime clouds and add the stars. That's one of the things we like to improve for GDC, which will be the other milestone for this project. One thing that couldn't get working correctly is having nice reflections in the water. So having all the buildings and terrain nicely reflect in the water. I'm still looking into it. I'm not sure if it is something that I don't really know how to do, or if it is a bug in 4.2. So still looking into it. We hope to hopefully we'll get it working for the next milestone. And yeah, as I said before, there's a lot of room for optimization in the 3D environment, both in like optimizing the geometry, using more trim sheets, whatever. There's a lot of room for improvement right there. I also have to talk to Clay about some optimizations. So we hope to get it looking even better for the next release, and also running even faster. And also, as Fer mentioned at the beginning of the talk, this is so far, it's just like, okay, you can walk around. It's interactive, sort of. You have sliders and buttons, but not much gameplay. So the idea is to make it like a very simple JRPG. I know that I say JRPG and simple, and but we love the challenge. So. Yeah, it's basically gonna be you walk around, and then you encounter an enemy, and you go to a battle, like a classic Final Fantasy style battle scene with all the enemies in a row, and they attack in turns. And we're gonna have like 2 attacks per character. That I'm sure they're gonna be 1 by the time we have to release this. Yeah, we also want, of course, we also want to have character animations and everything. So we'll see. We always like, you know, you have this nice little scope, and a couple of weeks later, it's a huge game. You know, like what happened? Well, because I had this idea that might look cool, and it didn't seem that difficult, and then you add and you add and you add. And, well, the thing that was simple turned out to be really hard. So and now we have the thing that was actually really hard. Well, we'll see, but. But yeah, we want to make this something that's also somewhat playable. Yeah.
Let's try again. Remember to log into Itch.io. I just fixed it. It should work.
By the way, in the meantime, I think we have some time for Q&A. So if anyone has questions, yeah, we also have the 3D artist on Discord. So if you have some questions for him, hopefully he will type really fast.
Hello. Thanks for the talk. As well as Itch, are you also planning on releasing your demo projects to, say, like Steam or other stores, and also updating them with like new content going on, like more levels and more enemies and things like this? Or is it kind of a case of it's released and then you're on to the next thing, I guess?
There are some improvements that we plan to do. There's some content that's already ready in terms of having the visual assets, but we didn't get to have it in time in the game. And there's probably some improvements that can be done to the code. It is a prototype, so the code is meant to be, the way it was approached is that it should be really simple. If I want to throw away something because the game design document changed a lot, it should be really easy. So that means you don't have really nice structures. You have everything is really like loosely integrated. So I don't know, we could do some changes now that we are more sure about how the game works in terms of gameplay. But this is mostly the idea is that you can tinker with it. So it's not so much as W4 is a game developer. We're not approaching it as we are publishing games for people to buy and play. It's more like this is how you can create something in Godot. In the case of Planet Crushers, it's mostly a demo of how to use W4 Cloud, which is our multiplayer solution. But of course, you could also use it with like the networking stuff is Godot networking.
Thank you for the presentation. I really like the prototype. It looks really nice. I wanted to ask, can we find like the, you said you will like post some of the progress you had with the project online. Can we find that somewhere, like, or is that like a plan you have?
You mean the 3D demo?
Yeah, for example, or do you plan like on releasing like a blog or something like that where we can like, I don't know, read up on your like basically the journey you had there? So
Oh, it's a great idea. we don't have it right now, but yeah, it's probably going to happen. I mean, we publish a blog post from time to time. So yeah, of course, if there is interest to have this summed up in writing, yeah, of course, we can do it. I have committed to it already, so I'll have to do it somewhere.
I really enjoyed doing games in 3D with Godot, but what would you say to maybe a 2D game developer that uses Godot but is maybe scared to go in 3D? So what is your impression going from 2D to 3D in Godot?
Well, that was mostly, I mean, when we started doing this demo, the main objective was, okay, we need something good looking to say, okay, Godot can do 3D. Yeah, because you know everyone says Godot cannot do 3D, but then the whole Unity thing happened, and very experienced people started creating very good-looking demos. So we couldn't do just that. Like there are a lot of cool demos by now. So it was more like, okay, it's more about the journey. Like I was not experienced in any of this, and was just 2 months. It was mostly reading the docs, and I think it is easy enough. Of course, first 3D art was really good looking from the start. So if you import good looking assets, you already have a pretty nice start. But it's not really that hard. It's mostly like playing around with the million settings that Godot will give you, and trying to find out what looks good and what doesn't. So it's more about trial and error. Of course, if you have knowledge of art and composition and color, that helps a lot. But it's not really something that, oh, it's so hard to do 3D in Godot. If you start, you'll see it's not really that hard.
Hey, on your search for free high quality assets, did you encounter Polyheaven?
Polyheaven?
Because you can reuse their assets in any kind of form, you can resell and everything.
No, Paolo, did we? I think we didn't. Thanks for the suggestion. But yeah, I don't know. I think we didn't. We might have, maybe we didn't find what we wanted. I don't know. I was focusing on like implementing everything, so I was not in charge of actually finding the assets. So I don't know. Maybe we did.
No.
We didn't.
No, I just wanted to point out that we started doing something else, and as an advice from Juan Linetsky, he said, oh, I know that Fer did this castle. It should be really simple. Don't worry. And so we started working on that castle before actually going to seek for other models. And the thing with Nature Manufacturer came afterwards. So we really didn't go and search the web for more models. We had a ton of models that Fer did, and then the Nature Manufacturer thing happened, and we added just, for this presentation, just the trees. So we didn't really look for anything. Yeah.
A question and a comment. The question, you mentioned in the slides at some point, I'm not sure if you said it out loud, that Vertex Color importing is broken somehow. Has that been reported? Because I saw something in a talk yesterday as well about the spaceship scene. I think you ran into the exact same issue there.
Yeah, I was also at the talk yesterday, and yeah, Janusz mentioned that, and I was like, oh no, because I didn't notice it. At least for our terrain that has like really smooth transitions, doesn't need any sharp transitions, so it might be kind of broken and not have the quality it needs to have, but it's not really noticeable. If I compare the blend file and the Godot file, it looks correct. So yeah, that's one of the things that I want to check when I get back home, if it is fixed in 4.2 or if it is still not working but just not obvious in our demo.
Also the comment for the mesh deduplication, it might be faster if you first check before you do any hashing the size of the mesh, the number of vertices.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course. there are a lot of optimizations actually, and also if you're really paranoid, you can also, if you ever have a collision, you can also start checking a couple more stuff and be completely sure without having to validate everything, right?
Yeah. Hi, I'm curious if you did any performance benchmarking or comparisons with other game engines, starting with the letter U or so?
Well, imagine that as hard as this for people with little experience to create this in 2 months, having to do it again in an engine that I don't use and I've never used, it would be really hard. So maybe for that, it would be nice if, I don't know, if we had someone already created a demo in both engines and we can make a benchmark, or we can compare, I don't know, like just grabbing the GLTF file and bringing it into, or the blend file, like exporting it for both engines. And yeah, we could do a side-to-side comparison, but no, we haven't done it. I mean, what our focus is not exactly that Godot runs like 1% better than any other engine, but that Godot runs good enough for all the people that are going to use it. So if that they can make nice looking large scenes and it can run at a good performance. So it's not so much about, okay, how better are we? Because I mean, we know we're not going to beat, like if you have to make a giant city, you know, for example, yeah, Unreal has a lot more tech. It's also much more difficult to use, but of course you have Nanite, you have everything, and Godot has different objectives. So in our case, what we found out is that, okay, it looks pretty good. We were happy with how it looks, and it was really easy to do. So that's one thing that many Godot users like, that usability, productivity. So that's it's how can we marry those two? How can we keep Godot being an engine that makes you really productive, that works well with small teams, where you can parallelize work as much as possible, and at the same time, how can we help teams doing more complex stuff, still have performance, still have their workflow. So if you, I don't know if you've been to Clay's talk, so he talked a lot about it. So that's more about the engine than our demo.
In the first part, when you talk about the doubling, getting the instances, the word was like the duplication. Yes, when you make the hash, you are taking into account some information about the materials. I ask about because in Blender, if you have a material, an object with multiple materials, all the materials are binded to the mesh and not to the object. So you can have one column with multiple materials, and you can have different columns with one of the materials switched. For Blender, this is not anymore an instance. But if you hash only the geometry, then inside Godot, they can be the same instance of the mesh, but with different materials. But I don't really know if Godot has some improvement or impact in this, okay, because he can render different, right?
Yeah, so the question is basically, when I do the duplication, there is also one more edge case that, I actually consider that after doing the last improvement, and oh no, we have one more edge case. So yeah, I think if you have if the mesh is exactly the same mesh with a different material, that's gonna be a problem. You still, I would still deduplicate it because it's the same mesh. So it should be an extra step where you check, okay, we deduplicate the mesh, but we have to make sure to keep the materials assigned to the right material assigned to the right surface. So that should be an extra step when you are deduplicating. Okay, it's the same mesh, but please do this and that. So. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's easy to.
So let me just repeat it for the recording. So you said it could be done. It could be done.
Yes, it's a couple more lines of code. Yeah.
All right. Okay, and that marks the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.